Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios on this Tuesday morning. If you've already listened to Mondays with Rob, you know Jeff is on the line with me. But join me to help me co-host, Mr. Bill Cooksey. Guys, how are y'all?
Turkey Good, killer. How are you doing?
Let me just say that, both of y'all, turkey killers, lucky enough to get out in the woods. God, I wish I could get out. Jeez.
You've got to get your priorities right. There's only one thing wrong. Bill and I have our priorities right.
Well, I got lucky. That was the first day I've hunted all spring. And so there was some luck. And I hadn't even scouted that place. I just went in there that morning and killed a turkey. So.
And sometimes that's the very best, ain't it?
You're dang right. When you scout, sometimes you think too much about it. Going with too much of a game plan, and the turkey doesn't follow it.
Exactly. They hardly ever do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, so I on social media, the little bit that I was over the weekend, I see the boat picture of the paddle back with the turkey in the boat, and then Jeff in our group text sends one early this morning. I mean, that you must have shot him flying out of the tree, Jeff.
I had two goblin, and right at daylight, for whatever reason, they quit gobbling. I don't know, or probably a coyote went under them or something. I don't know, them two, another one fired up just down south of me. So I made a walk around there, and I was lucky enough to find that deer shed that I showed you a picture of. I sent a picture of there on the way, and I was set up on a fence row, and it didn't take very many calls. He come up, and he popped out of the woods about 15 yards, and that was the last time he saw me face to face.
It's fun when you get one so early that you need the flash to take the picture.
Exactly. It was 20. It was 20 to 7. It was awesome. Yeah, but it was a beautiful morning up. We just opened yesterday. Our season did, and then Coldest called me right before you guys did, and he'd been on one this morning and hung up on him 3 or 4 times, and then he finally killed him, and a big old bird, 1.5 inch spurs, and two double bearded bird, and all that. So good turkey day today.
It's beautiful here. I wish I was in the woods.
Yeah, even up here in Illinois, it's pretty nice today. We had snow Sunday. Had 1.5 inches of snow on Sunday.
Good grief.
It snowed so hard on my way to church you couldn't see. Crazy.
Middle of April. Bill, you're still dealing with water problems. Probably still, I mean, of course, you showed it in the picture, having to paddle a turkey back out. But, I mean, water can cause a lot of issues when it comes to turkeys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm hunting the bottoms, and, you know, Jeff is too. And, water's everything. I mean, last year, there were a lot of times I couldn't hunt because the water was either too low to get there or so high it flooded the place. I mean, where I killed that turkey 3 weeks ago was about 10 feet deep. You could look out through the woods, and I meant to take a picture of it, but it was raining so much I just didn't get my phone out. You could see where that water had just been. You know, I marked the trees, and it was way over my head. I mean, way over my head.
Wow.
It looks like a moonscape, except there are all those low spots, and they fill up with water, and that's what killed me Sunday morning. Should have had another bird, but I just never, you know, set up on the wrong side of the water too many times, not even knowing the water was there.
A lot of time water is like a woven wire fence in the hills.
Yeah.
You know, it's a barrier for them. They won't cross, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
But turkeys can be so smart, and then they can be so dumb, they forget to use their wings, and they can fly. I think they forget they can fly. But if they want it bad enough, they'll come.
In this bottom, if it's the permanent water like the creek, I get them to fly across that really regular.
Right.
But when it's,
when it's the
flooded stuff, they don't, in my experience, cross that. I don't know if that's common everywhere, but that's what I deal with.
Yeah, they've kind of done it here. They fly from, you know, I'm hunting a lot of islands, different thing in Mississippi River, you know, and now they're all flooded and they're flying across, and then all the inland side has got seep water coming up, so they're flying. But they're like, they fly from those islands across the Mississippi like it's like nothing. It's like an eagle would up here. You know what I mean? That's crazy. They're so used to it. One time I stepped up on a sand levee. I come up on the boat, and I made two or three calls, and the bird come up. And when he come up, he jumped. He saw me, and he jumped and flew towards the island. And I shot the first shot, and, of course, I put it right on him, and I've been used to, you know, 1,600 feet per second steel. I forgot I got a 900 feet lead turkey shot in. And so I led him a second shot, and he falls in the Mississippi River. And when I picked him out of that river, he looked like a pterodactyl. I'm telling you, it was a god-awful looking thing here.
They aren't pretty when they're wet.
No.
No, not at all. Yeah, they're horrible. Yeah, and they can't swim unless they use their wings. I've seen that. So.
Yep.
Yeah, he's talking.
Yep.
Hey, I'll tell you two experts something that I learned and I had no clue. I have never, ever claimed to be an expert on this podcast about turkey hunting. Just started really officially turkey hunting about 6 or 7 years ago. But I've always known that turkeys breed, when they breed, is all dealing with the length of day. Just about everything in wildlife is dealing with the length, photo periods. But I had no idea, and I'm going to sound like an idiot to you guys and to the audience, but I had no idea until this past weekend that states set their turkey seasons based off of they want to get a certain percentage of hens mated before the season opens.
Typically, that's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weather's got everything to do with that, you know, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. Most of the time, that's the way with, you know, that's why you see early, you'll see two gobblers with 15 hens out there, you know, before season. And then once he's, and at that time, a lot of times the weather will get wrong, and at that time, it is super hard to kill one. But he goes out there to them hens, and they're out there. I mean, they just stay with them, and they're henned up, and that's the end of it. And then as the season goes along, I think what the state's trying to do, you know, is to get most of them bred, and then, then that gobbler's looking. That's why a late morning hunt's always usually, you know, first thing off the roost, you know, they usually breed them hens, and once they get done, they're looking again, you know. So that's what makes it good. So.
Yeah.
I know that Mississippi, I want to say that Mississippi's 30%. You know, that's what the biologists have kind of figured. And I want to say Tennessee, Bill, I may be wrong about this, was like 50%. They wanted to get 50% realistically or scientifically.
If that's Tennessee's goal, they're very poor at figuring it out. And I love TWRA. We have a great agency. But honestly, our turkey season starts too early, and a lot of people will blast me for that. But 80 to 90% of our birds are typically still in winter flocks or have just started breaking up. I've used fall tactics on opening weekend in Tennessee many times of breaking up a flock.
Huh. Yeah, I had no idea that that's how biologists set the dates.
Mm-hmm.
You know that hens are, I mean, turkeys are going to breed at a certain time. We're setting the season around the breeding, but all right, it can't start before this date because we want to get a certain amount of hens bred before, you know, these gobblers start getting jacked up. I mean, that's a pretty interesting.
That's the plan and that's the goal. And like Jeff said, the farther along in the cycle they are on opening day, the easier it is to hunt them. You know, the fewer hens they'll have, but and it's good to get some bread early, but it's weather, as Jeff said, is a huge factor, not so much on breeding, but when nests get wiped out, the hens go right back to it. So
that's right. And Jeff, I'm sure where you are, I mean, you're 300 miles to the north of where I am here in Oxford. Weather can, just like you just said, y'all had an inch and a half of snow this weekend.
Last year on opening day, and I've seen this twice in my life, but last year on opening day, it was 28 degrees. The winds was blowing 25 mile an hour out of the north, and it was snowing so hard you couldn't already see. And I went up the river, 3 miles up the Mississippi in the boat, and luckily I had a big old war eagle to get me through it, and got up there and had one on her. He gobbled twice, come down, I killed him, luckily. But that was one of the toughest hunts I'd have. And one other Easter, right after Easter, on opening day, it snowed real hard again like that, and killed one that day. But they'll still... You know, guys won't say that, you know, sometimes the prettiest day, Bill will tell this to you, you know, you can pick out a, you know, 75-degree day, sun shining, birds chirping, no wind. You think, man, today is a day. And sometimes that's their worst day. Sometimes them bad weather days are the ones, you know. So, but, you know, not usually, but sometimes. You know, so.
I was sitting there in the rain on Saturday.
Exactly, yeah.
Sitting there in the rain, and they were gobbling pretty dang good. So...
And you can always figure a rainy day, you go get out to a big edge of a big field, and they're coming to that field. They're getting out of the woods. They're going to come out there in that woods, you know, so sooner or later. So you can kind of figure what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, away from the turkeys, back to the story, because the steak is on the grill being, it is almost ready. It's about ready to be served.
It's getting ready, yeah. That's pretty good. Pretty good way to describe this whole thing. I got a kick out of that when I seen that.
Oh man, I got two or three messages about the way I had people mad about how we ended it last week.
Oh, I saw right that. Yeah, you weren't a popular person. And if anybody said anything to me, I blamed it on you, just so you know. So
I blamed it on Bill.
Ain't my deal. You know, I'm just talking. I tried to keep going, but yeah, he wouldn't let me. So
I blamed it on Bill. I said Bill said the timer was done. We need to go. So that's the end of it.
There you go.
Well,
that's me.
Well, the one thing I do know, Bill's used to it, because when he was at Avery, he took a lot of that. I felt so sorry for him. He got a lot of that there, but he took it like a man. I'll say that. Shook his head, went on, did it his own way anyway, I think. So
it's all part of the program.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Well, Jeff, when we left it last week, you were getting a phone call. You were getting
a phone call
from a buddy in Nebraska? Nebraska?
Yeah, I had he was from Nebraska. I was from Nebraska, and I got this phone call, and I'd been up to the Alberta Trophy Hunts up there and get a phone call. It was my buddy, and he'd come he's just a redneck, but, you know, a guy that makes a lot of money, you know, very good businessman. And if I told you what he did for a living, he'd probably know. But anyway, I'll just leave his name out. But he come down. He had an airplane. He'd fly down and hunt with me. And I had a little airport next to my shop, and he'd fly down and hunt, or we'd circle the refuges and look at them. And just a good guy, you know, or I'd fly out and hunt with him. And so a lot of times he came to Canada. So when it was him calling, you know, I answered because I figured he was wanting to come up and go hunting. So I said, hey, what's up, man? He said, you want to come hunting? He goes, no, I can't. I'm too busy. He goes, I just want to let you know. If I remember it right, he said he was in a high-stakes poker game. He was in a poker game with this guy. And he said this guy played with him all the time, and he said he is one of the top undercover guys in the country. And he's from Iowa. And I said, what do you mean he's a top undercover guy? He goes, well, he is the guy. You know, he's a federal agent, you know, and he's a undercover warden, you know. And I said, well, what's it got to do with me? And he goes, well, he said, I always ask him what he's doing, if it's a big game or what he's doing, you know, and everybody keep this in mind, because later on in this story, I'll tell you a story about this guy. But anyway, he said, he said, told me he's coming to Canada. He's got a high profile waterfowl guy. So he naturally, he asked him who, and he wouldn't tell him. So anyway, he says, I don't know if anything's going on. I don't know if it's you. I don't know if it's anybody. I don't know if he's just BSing me. I don't know what the deal was, but, you know, I'm just telling you. So I said, okay, thanks a lot. And I said, he's from Iowa. Yep, he's from Iowa. I said, okay. So I'm sitting there thinking, and I thought, well, Grounds I know is home. He's not up here. I talked to Freddie. He wasn't Zink. He wasn't up here. He was coming in a couple weeks. The only other one besides me was that I knew would be Sean Mann, and he was about 2-3 hours just straight east of me in Alberta. And I thought, Sean's a pretty clean-cut guy. I kind of doubt if it's him. You know, maybe it's me. I don't know what they're doing. You know, so I never had trouble, so I didn't think nothing about it. And I really didn't even care. So, you know, I guess a lot, maybe I should have been scared, but I was, we didn't do nothing wrong. So I went over to the outfitter, and I said, told him the story. He said, well, come over here, let's look at the computer and see who's coming, you know, who's booked in. So we went and looked at the computer, see the hunters is coming in, and they book 5-day hunts and 3-day hunts. And so, and in Canada and Alberta, you can't hunt on Sunday. So a lot of the 3-day hunts would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then they'd fly out on Saturday or Sunday morning. So, you know, and that would be our break day, you know. So she said, you know, these guys here, there's two guys from Iowa here. There's two of them. Said, then they come in, they want to come in on Friday and hunt Friday, Saturday, and Monday. And she goes, I tried to talk these guys out of it. She goes, they were just adamant to come in those 3 days. I said, okay. So they kind of screwed our deal up. I said, well, I don't know. Maybe that's them. So, and they're, well, they're not coming in for a week or so. I said, okay. So everything's going good, and the day before we scouted a field that was unbelievable good, probably the best field I ever hunted in Canada and all the years I ever went up there. So, and I am just chomping at the bit to get to this field. So that night at afternoon, in pulls this Black Ford F-150 and pulls in. These two boys get out and look, that's Iowa plates, and we had these little cabins up there. He had the cabins for hunters, and it was kind of funny because the doors were short. You had to duck to get in. And this old boy, he was a tall one. He just, first thing he did was busted his head on, so I kind of got a kick out of that. But anyway, long story short, he comes in, and I said, so I went always to go meet the hunters. So I went down and talked to him, and I just said, hey, guys, what's up? You know, oh, man, we've seen all your videos and stuff. That's why we came up. You know, you're killing them. Yeah, they was real pumped up. Jack said, yeah, we're doing good. We got a great field tomorrow. And, well, we get to go with you tomorrow, right? And I said, yeah, you can go with me. That's probably somebody else go with. So anyway, we got talking. I said, you boys from Iowa, huh? And they said, oh, yeah. I said, where at? And they said, south of Des Moines. And
were they telling the truth? Hey, Jeff, in the things that they were telling you, was it the truth?
Well, their names weren't the truth. The guy said his name was Dwayne Jackson, you know, and in all honesty, his real name is Justin Mays. And anybody wants to see this, what happened, you can. If anybody you can find, I don't have any for sale, so don't call me about that, but we don't have any more. But on Fallen Skies 5, the opening hunt is a slaughter, and it opens up with me just blowing this duck in half. And so the two guys that are on my left, that's the two guys. So if anybody wants to see what they look like. So anyway, we got talk. I just thought I'd throw that out there. So anyway, we're sitting there talking, and I said, where you guys from? Oh, south of Des Moines. I said, oh, no kidding, man. You guys deer hunt? And they said, oh, no, not really. I said, man, oh, man, you're in deer paradise down there. Of course, you know, I'm just asking all about the deer hunting. I'm all about that. And so I just said, what do you guys do for a living? And the big guy, the main guy, said, well, he said, I farm. I said, no kidding. I said, now I'm saying, man, you must have some good deer hunting, you know, and I'm trying to get in on a hunt, even though I know who they are, you know, I'm just messing with, but I don't know totally for sure, you know what I'm saying, so I'm
right.
Feeling them out, so I said, I just said at the time, I said, well, how many acres you farm? 500. I said, oh. I said, what else you do for a living? Nothing. He said, well, it ain't my farm, it's my father-in-law's. I said, we got a pretty nice father-in-law, send you up here on a $2,750 hunt, you know, and 500 acres. I said, that must be some pretty prime soil, 500 acres, you know. I don't care if it is in Iowa, you know, 230 bushel corn, yeah. So I just left off, and he didn't say no more, and he kind of looked at me funny, and now I know. I mean, I'm just like, don't give me this crap, you know. So Anyway, the other guy sitting there not saying much. He's a little shorter guy. He ain't saying much. And I said, what do you do for a living, man? He goes, well, me and my wife got some hair salons. And, you know, I said, do you know where Ankeny's at? Yeah, I know where Ankeny's at. He said, yeah, we got some around Ankeny area. And I said, oh, no kidding. What's the name of them? And he rattled off a name, and it stuck in my head real good. And I said, you sell a lot of hair products in there and stuff? And he just looked at me funny, and he said, oh, yeah. And I said, do you sell any Chi products? And he said, I don't know. I said, oh, okay. Well, the reason I did, I knew a gal that was a rep for Chi products, and that was her core area right there. So I said, okay, well, we're going to eat pretty soon. You know, I'll catch up with you guys later. And they give me a funny look. Now, if they have a half a brain, they already know I know. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And come down to, yeah. So, and later on I come down, if you want to look at undercover stuff, I'm not a lawyer and I can't tell you everything, but you look into it. At that point, I had a state policeman tell me, at that point, and then this guy went on to work for Homeland Security, but he said at that point they should have left that night knowing you knew who they were or you had an idea because you were out there with guns and put each other's lives in danger. So, you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't,
mm-hmm.
They say. So, which we always figured made it illegal, but you know, I have a lot of money to fight that. But anyway, long story short, but I didn't care. I don't care. So the next phone call I make, as soon as I left him, I call this gal, and I ask her about all the, look, she said, that place, I've been up there for a year, rep for years, there ain't no places like that. And if they don't know what a Chi product is, and any of you guys out there, you know, if you look in your bathroom, your wife's probably got a Chi iron in there, you know, so, I mean, everybody knows what that is. So, especially if you're on a hair salon. So I said, okay. So I went over and told the outfitter, I said, these are the guys. And I asked them a pile more questions, you know. And just nothing was adding up. So also got their license plate. And what they never did find out, I had a guy who was a police officer run their plate, and it didn't come back to no Dwayne Jackson. So anyway, go over and ask the outfitter, and he said, well, look, you got that good field. I'm going to send them somewhere else. I'll send you a different field. I go, oh, no. Uh-uh. No. I told my two camera guys, Brian Reniger and Paul Sawyer. I told them two boys, I said, look, they're undercover guys, so we got to watch everything. I want you to film everything they do, and we're going to make this a perfect hunt for them. You know? And I said, I want a point-of-view camera at the end of my layout line, which is, for the folks that don't know what that is, it's just another camera on a remote. And they click that on, and it shows me getting up and shooting, and shows what I'm doing. And it shows what I'm doing right there. So I want to, most of the time, and Bill, you well know, you've been involved in it, you know, you get up and shoot a bunch of ducks, and you have to do all this B-roll back, showing the guys pulling the gun up and all that, you know.
Right.
So this saves all that.
And it almost always looks like crap.
It looks terrible. And the only way you can do it is put a point-of-view camera, and we always do that. You know, we always do it. So we go out there that morning, and we were in my truck and trailer, and me and the two camera guys, and that's the way we'd always do. We go to the end of the field, and there's a guide there. He's an Indian guide from up there, and he meets us at the field. We're supposed to meet him, and then these guys are behind us. There's three of them. Those two guys and a guy from Texas is behind us, and a good friend of mine, and that's
hold
my
on,
honest.
Jeff, hold on just a second. I've got two questions here. At this point,
sure.
Are you intimidated at all? And then second,
no.
Are you running through your mind, why? Why are they here? Why do they want me?
Well, at the time, I just figured at the time, they've seen the videos, they've seen all the stuff, they've already let me know they've watched all the videos, and all. They're probably just checking me out. And I'm thinking, you know, if there is a problem, because you got to go back to where I said last time. I ain't never been, you know, had no ticket. I had a ticket for anything before this, for nothing. So I'm just figuring, they're just checking us out.
Let me hold this up for a second.
Sure.
And Rocky and anyone out there listening, look, I'm not a famous guy in hunting or fishing. Yeah, I've been around some, but I'm not like Jeff where I've been, you know, front and center like that. I've had game wardens follow me for a couple of years.
Yeah, they're checking things. And if you're killing stuff and you're posting it and you're showing videos or doing that, they're coming. They're going to check you out.
Mm-hmm.
So And it's like right now, I mean, there's, you know, there, and this is a fact, you know, I know Illinois does, I'm sure every other state does. Illinois has, I don't know how many guys is on it, but they have a task force that all they do is watch social media, you know, to write a ticket. You know, so you better watch, you know, the guys out there, you got to watch what you're posting out there, you know. But anyway, long story short, we're, we go out on a hunt, and you ask if I'm intimidated. I'm not intimidated. In all honesty, I'm like okay with this because I'm thinking, I'll just prove to you I'm not doing anything wrong. You'll be off my back. You're going to say, this guy's done everything right, you know, blah, 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 and it's over. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea why they came. I have no idea about anything, and there's still a piece of doubt in my mind about if these guys are whatever, but it's not enough to keep me from doing everything exactly 100% perfect. So we pulled the field, and of course, nobody knows this but me and the two camera guys, okay? We didn't tell the guide up there. We didn't tell the other hunter. We didn't tell anybody. So we get to the blind, get everything put up, decoys out and everything, and this is going to be a slaughter. If you watch this deal, it was unbelievable good. Got ducks and geese. So we set everything out, and one guy says, this Justin looks at me and says something about his gun's jacked up or something messed up or something. I said, no problem. At that time, Benelli had given me five SB2s, and I carried them with me all the time. I had plenty of them for everybody because I wanted everybody, if they showed a video, to show the Benellis on it. So anyway, I said, no problem, bud. And he knew this, and I knew what he was doing. I thought, well, there's the first deal. He's wanting to check my guns out. So I go get the gun and get him a gun and come back, and I said, hey, by the way, while we're at it, and at the time I was sponsored by Winchester, I said, while we're at it, and I come back with a pile of shells, which I'd always put like six boxes of shells in my layout blind, and I come back with some more shells out of the trader, and I said, here, let me have your shells. Whoa, what are you talking about? I said, no, let me have your shells. I said, I don't want to take no chances. I'm filming this. I said, if they see, you know, Federal or some other shell in there, you know, this ain't no good. It'll ruin the whole video. So here, I'm going to give you your shells. Go ahead and take them. And they're like, oh, okay, like this here. And it was reluctant, but they gave me their shells. Now, do you know why I did that? You got no clue why.
Shoot live loads.
Exactly. I thought, you're not shooting no dummy loads on me. So we're going to take care of this. So, all right, here we go. So the hunt starts. And so now I know we're all good. And I purposely put them. It was hay bales in the field, big round bales. Camera guys are next to a round bale, and I purposely put them on the side where the camera guys could be on them all the time, watch them. And they had, plus they had a good eye on them. So we start out, and there's those two guys, me, and a layout blind this other guy. So we can kill 32 ducks and 32 geese, okay, legally. So here comes the ducks. The first duck that came in right at daylight, and it's not unusual in Canada, come 5 yards from me, right in front of the blind, I raise up, and I blow it in 17 pieces, and that's how the video starts. And then if you look at a video, welcome to Follows Guys 5, you know, when that happens. So anyway, so that's the first duck, and the dog comes over, and I've got a piece of it, and I lay it by my blind. Here comes the ducks, and I mean, these ducks are pouring in. It's just typical Canada, and I mean, they're eating this thing up, and we've got ducks killed in no time. So what I did with the ducks is, and I did this every day, so you do not have to separate them in Canada. Or you didn't have to at the time. I don't know if that's changed, but you didn't have to at the time. But what I would do to keep count, I would keep putting birds behind each blind, and I'd put like 8, 8, 8, 8, and that kept me a good count of what's going on. You know, so it's pretty easy to get lose track. So when it's fast and furious like that. Plus, I'm telling him, hey, man, help me keep count, you know. I don't want to lose count on it. I don't want to get this right, you know. I kept saying that, and he would. So we kill all the ducks. I go, whoa, 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 stop, stop, stop. We're done. We got 32. All right, cool, all right. I remember him saying, did you count that one, you know, you killed that blowed up one? I said, yep, it's right here. There's seven in that one behind you. I said, there ain't nothing to eat on it, but here it is. So I said, boys, listen, them geese are coming. I said, they're going to be here any second. I said, now, look. I said, I want you, I told Justin, I said, which is Dwayne at the time, I said, I want you to help me get these mojos up. And I said, we're not just laying them down or shutting them off. We're going back here. And behind us, it was a rolling field and a little rolling hills like in it. And behind us was like a dry pond with weeds and stuff in it. And I purposely put my back to that so they'd be, you know, and the wind was coming behind us. it couldn't bend perfect. It's all belly up in your face stuff. So I said, we're going to hide them mojos back behind some weeds. I said, look, if we start killing these geese, although the dogs are going to get them, I want you to help me. I don't like dead bodies. I don't like dead bodies of geese laying in a field. Some people put their head behind their back. And I don't like that. I think they know what it is, but that's just me. But I said, I want you to help me and carry them geese back there in that dry field. I'm going to hide them back there, you know, as we kill them. Okay, man, all right. And now they can say anything they wanted to. This was so fast, furious, and so unbelievable. Those boys were having the time of their life. You know what I mean? They'd never seen nothing like this before, you could tell. So we're all having a good time. You can watch the video. Two to three times, I don't remember how it was, two or three times, I purposely did not even pick up my gun. I just raised up and said, kill them, boys. And you can see the point of view camera showing that. We put it in the video on purpose. So no matter what happened, there's two or three times Jeff didn't shoot. So we get the birds. He's helping me carry them and all this. And we've got a young dog. He did really good. You can watch the video. He did a really, really good job. But he was a young dog. And he's got all the geese and everything. Anyway, I said, whoa, 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 boys, we got him. I've got the last one. I said, we need four or something. We killed him. And I said, that's it. So at the end of the, and they're all high-fiving. Everybody's had a great time picking up the geese. And they're watching me count these things. I saw them, you know. And so I got them all counted out, so we're all good. So at the end of the lane was the Indian guide, you know, up there. And super nice guy. Anyway, here he comes. And he comes down. Now, he's been watching this show from up on a hill. And he comes down there, and he goes, man, what a hunt. He goes, man, I did good today, you know, because they're looking for a tip, you know. So, and sure. He goes, oh, yeah, man, it's awesome, you know, and it's great. He goes, hey, man, he goes, we got one. You guys sailed one I don't think you got. I'm thinking, oh, why did he say this? So I said, all right. So I figured, well. And so now these guys perk up, and they're like, oh, we got another one, we got an extra, what we got? I said, I don't know. He says he's seen one. I thought we had them all. Well, you and I counted them. Heck, I don't know. I said, I said, I ain't got nothing. I said, I was a couple times, I didn't even shoot. Oh, you didn't? I said, no, you can watch the camera if you want. And I'm letting them know I know, you know. So, anyway.
Once you had your eight, you put your gun down.
Excuse me?
Once you had your eight geese, you put the gun down.
Well, there was two or three times during the thing, or say there would be four come in, and actually these guys paid and I had. And I wasn't a guide, but, you know, and I just purposely didn't even shoot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they couldn't say he was, you know, party, killed them all, whatever. So, and it happened so fast. I mean, it was this, and it was probably still turned out to be one of the best video clips we'd ever had. You know, it was awesome. And I'm pumped about this. Now, let's go back a little bit during this goose hunt. During this hunt, I looked up and say there would be, I don't know, say there's a dozen geese come in, and we killed six of them, okay? I'd watch them, or say there was eight, and we killed six and two more, and I'd watch them, and they were going about a quarter of a mile behind us, and they were lighting in a pond back there. And so I told them guys, I said, hey, remind me when we leave, don't let me forget about them geese in that pond. I said, because we, you know, I said, that's a loafing pond for them. I said, if it's any good, if it's loaded up with them, tomorrow we'll have a back shoot there. And I said, what are you talking about, a back shoot? I said, well, geese go out and feed, then they go to a pond, loaf around all day. And I said, if you can go be at that pond, and then they go out and feed, and then back to the roost. I said, so if we can be on that pond, that's the dumbest time they ever are, right after they feed, and they're coming right straight to that pond, and nobody ever bothers them. We'll kill them there, and it'll be a later hunt. We can sleep in the morning. And they laughed, and, oh, yeah, okay, but they didn't understand. I knew they didn't understand what I was talking about. And that happened two or three times. So the Indian guide comes down. We're at the end of the hunt. Here, the Indian guide comes down. Hey, man, you say I went across there. So I thought, okay, well, I'll go look. So we went over the hill, went over one of them hills. Now, they couldn't see us, and there's a dead man laying out there. So what do you do at this point? Do you leave it and go, nope, didn't see none. Nope, wasn't none there. Knowing they're probably going to come back. Somebody is.
And
check it. Or they may just go
waste
bolt.
Is a much worse deal.
And that's the way, and I don't like that. But before I could say anything, the Indian's out and got it and threw it back of his truck. So we come back. And he goes, hey, we got this extra goose, you know. And they go, what are we going to do with that? And I said, I don't know. You boys killed it. What do you want me to do? I guess I could call wardens on you. And just laughed. I just laughed it off. And about that time, before I could do anything, that Indian said, he goes, "Hey, I'll take it home. I didn't, no problem. I got it. I'll take it home. Stay in a race, help you get an extra one. I just, I got it. Don't worry about it. Ain't no big deal." And away he goes. I'm thinking, well, somebody's going to pay for this deal, but it's either going to be those two or the other guy, because I didn't kill an extra one. I didn't even shoot a couple times. So I'm really not worried about that. You know what I'm saying? I figured something was going to come of it. But so at that point, we take off, we load it up, everything, you know, and I said, okay, follow us back to town, you know, and we'll stop and eat breakfast. So, okay, so we're going down the road, and one of them said, I forget which one, hey, don't forget to stop at that pond, check them out. I said, oh, yeah, well, so we stopped down there, got the binoculars out and glassed it. They did the same thing, and imagine that, is, happened to have a set of binoculars. Well, so we glassed the pond, looked, there were six geese sitting on the pond. So I just got in the truck and went on. So we got to eat breakfast or whatever. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but he said something about the six geese, and I said, dude, there ain't enough in there to do that, you know. So, and I don't remember if he said anything else about it or not. But keep this in mind as I go on down the line here. So we leave, go back, and so this was on Friday. So, hey, what do you guys do on Friday afternoon or whatever? And I said, well, if the other guys come in, and if these guys didn't shoot ducks, you know, they'll go back out and shoot ducks. I ain't doing nothing. You know, I'll probably scout, you know, take a nap after lunch and go scouting, you know. Oh, that's what you, yeah, can we go? I said, nah, probably not. We probably just do this. You guys just hang out and take it easy, you know. I said, you're going to need, I said, rest them arms up for tomorrow, you know. And so then the whole time while we're eating and everything, they're like, oh, man, we want to come to your duck club and go hunting. You know, gosh, that looks so awesome. You know, we've seen all your videos, your club, and that flooded corn and all. I said, man, ducks is pouring in there. I said, thousands, and all. This kept going on. I said, well, it's real simple. Just get your pocketbook out and call in and book a hunt. I don't care. And at this point, I'm thinking, I don't care. Let them come and hunt. Then they can see we're okay down here, you know. I don't care. And I'll take the government's money. I don't care. So anyway, the next day we go out, and Stan goes, hey, man, go here. And I said, nah, I'm going to go out to the field over here. And he goes, you just shot that 2 days ago. I said, exactly. That's where I'm going. So we did. So we went to a different field, and we kind of burned it to the ground a few days before. And so we really didn't kill me that day. So they got a good hunt, so they got their money's worth. So we just, you know, you follow where I'm going here? So we didn't kill much that day. So we're perfectly, everything's good, and they're good, we're talking, and everything's good. I'm asking a lot of questions, and so they're asking me a ton of questions, and so everything's fine. We come back in for supper, and we went. So this is Saturday. So now the main question is, what do you guys do on Sunday? I said, well, we go, sometimes I go scouting in the morning. So you go hunting? Or he said, no, you can't hunt. It's Sunday. You can't hunt. And I said, thank God. You get a day off anyway. I said, I'm tired after 5 days of this. And you do, you know. Yep. That might sound, you know, but you do. You're wore out. Your dogs is wore out. You're wore out. You need to regroup, decoys, everything, get everything back together. So he says, what do you do on Sundays then? I said, well, I'll get up early, and I'll go with Stan. Me and him will get up. We'll drink some coffee, talk about the week ahead, go scout some ducks and geese, and drink a few coffee, come back and eat breakfast. And I said, then I go to Edmonton every Sunday, and I go to the West Edmonton Mall, biggest mall in the world. I said, and I walk around, it's 4 miles around it. I said, there's a Gold's Gym in there, and I work out every day. Oh, no kidding, is there a mall up there? We can go to the mall, yeah, get our vibes, something. I said, yeah, man, here's where it's at. I gave him some direction. Oh, no kidding, you know. So, all right, so all good. So we go to town. This is what they never knew. When they hear this, this is something they never knew. I followed them. I followed them in the owner of the camp's vehicle. So I won't say much more about that. But anyway, they somehow ended up in Barnes & Noble with their laptops on for whatever reason. I don't know. The farmers and hairdressers, I guess you got to look at laptops. I don't know what the deal is. So the day ended, and I went home and did my deal, and I still don't care. We're thinking this, we're laughing about this deal right now. We're thinking it's funny, you know. We didn't do anything wrong. So so then on Monday, we went hunting, and I don't think they killed very many on Monday either. So that kind of ended the deal, and we figured we're all good, or nothing happened, and everything was great. There's nothing for you to get, right? I mean, we didn't do anything. So it's all,
I mean, the only thing that the only ticket that could have been issued would have been a fifth of a goose for each shooter.
Well, I don't know, how do you do that? So now there's three hunters left, and I didn't shoot two different times, which is proven by video. So I didn't shoot two different times on the geese. So it had to be those three guys, but leaves me out of the situation. You know, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Now, I'm going to fast forward here to the end of this, okay? You all know I got charges in Canada also.
Right.
You know, at the end of this whole deal, I got charged in Canada. Now, I got some different charges, and I'll go on to that later. I'll tell you all about that later on in this. But you know what two of those charges were after this hunt? I got charged for that goose. I paid
you
for that
did.
Goose.
So
you can look it up. You can do whatever, but I paid for that goose, that extra goose, on that hunt. Now, this ain't all the charges. This is part of it. But I got charged for that, and you know what else I got charged for? You know
what
you were talking about earlier about the wanton waste deal?
Yep.
Not retrieving cripples, those six geese on that pond. They charged me with them. It's cripples. They're a quarter mile away.
Wow.
Okay. So you don't think, you know, if folks out there don't think they can't get you what they want, they will. They'll get you whatever you want. Now, again, I'll say this again like I said before. I'm not innocent here trying to play that. I'm just telling you what happened. I'll tell you what I did wrong. I'll tell you all that. But I'm just telling you what can happen here. I'm thinking I'm squeaky freaking clean right now, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing wrong. And I'm happy camper. We're all happy because we just proved our camp's good and we did good, you know. So after that, I don't think nothing even about it no more. You know, like, it's not even my mind because you don't do nothing wrong. You know, you get pulled over a speeding ticket you didn't do, and you get, you know you didn't do it or something. It's out of your mind. You don't think about it, you know. In fact, I'm pretty happy because I'm thinking, well, they're off my case for a while. But
right.
Then they called in when I get home. I was up there, I think, 50 days. When I get back home, it's time to get my duck club going and everything. And so, of course, I go over to Hunter List with my daughter, and I took care of it. I said, hey, this guy here, this Dwayne Jackson. I said, did him and his buddy book a hunt? Yeah, they called them. They paid. Already paid. They paid in full. So I started laughing. I said, well, we got some of the government's money we've been paying back. So, so it's okay, and I knew they were coming. And it's, you know, and with duck season, and we're killing pretty good. And I told them when to book. I told them when to book and book the hunt and all this, and you know what a good time was, because they want to know all that at the end of the season. So we've done, went through our season, most of our duck season, and one day about, you know, one afternoon, you know, what I would do is, and I'll show you later, I'll tell you later, I'll build into this, but here's how our hunter's system worked. I ran all Heartland lodges, waterfowl hunters, which we're getting ready to do again this year. But anyway, I ran all their hunters with my buddy Gary Harpool, who owns the place, and we'd run their hunters, and they would hunt till 11 o'clock in the morning. And they would stay at Heartlands Lodge, which was not far from my shop in Pittsfield, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And where the rest of the hunters were our hunters, and when they came in, I had two different hotels there that I had deals made with, and they booked our hunters. And because they were nice, clean, nice hotels, and we talked about marketing, business, and all this. It was business for several reasons. My shop was in Pittsfield, so my duck club was 8 or 9 miles west of Pittsfield towards the river. But I wanted these guys to come back to Pittsfield and stay there, and that's where I lived in Pittsfield for a lot of reasons. One, excuse me, they could book their hunts there, finish paying for their hunt, book their hunt, come in, but I wanted them to come in the shop because they all, you know, they're going to need a duck call. So I'm going to keep them close. And it was easy for me to meet up with them, you know, like if we'd hunt till 10 in the morning and then go back at 2, they'd meet up there, follow me down. It was a great deal. And then at nighttime, they all want to go eat dinner or something, so I lived right there. So why would I want to book them, put them somewhere else? You know what I'm saying? So I wanted them all right there close. So that's where all the hunters went.
Mm-hmm.
These guys come in. They booked their hunt. And I just said, one of the first things I said, where are you guys staying? We booked a motel over Louisiana, Missouri, which was a couple months. We figured it was close to your club. Nothing registers to me at that point other than, why would you stay over there? You know, at the time,
yeah.
They remodeled it. And, you know, by the time, it wasn't a near as nice a place as where we had. And I'm thinking, all right, whatever, I don't care. What time you want us to meet us, you can meet us at the club. We'll show you where the club is and all this. Well, anyway, so he shows up at 2:30 in the afternoon, 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon, they show up at my shop. And, oh, man, you know, we're going to get to hunt with you today. And I said, no. I said, you're not going to get me. And I already told these guys what was at my guides. They're coming. This is what's going to do. So I took the guy who was one of my better friends, and this will play on to the story later, too. One of my best friends, and anyway, that guided for me all the time, I paid him to guide. And so anyway, I said, I done told him, I said, you're going to take these two guys, take them to my pit, which I owned a place, so I had the best spot, you know. So I said, you're going to take them there, take them to my pit, take them down there. I want you to show them a great time. You watch them like a hawk. You watch everything that goes on. Get your limit. And can I shoot with them? Sure you can. I said, make sure you get your limit and you do everything right. And, you know, I just want you to show them a good time. And, okay. I said, where are you going to go? I said, I'm going to go 200 yards from you right up here. And I said, believe me, I'll be watching you. So I had a group of hunters. Ducks were all over the place and all this. So these guys go with him. All right, so we go up, and I'm hunting a couple hundred yards away from him with all this, and I'm watching what's going on. We killed our ducks pretty good. And at this place here, we killed 90% mallards. You know, I mean, we hardly killed anything else, some teal and stuff. It's mostly all mallards and athletic corn. So we killed our ducks, most of our ducks, and these guys are shooting down there, and they're not shooting the best, I can tell you. So I had a big, tall levee around this whole place, and it's a pretty good-sized levee, and then I had like a levee going out in the lake to the pits, which set out in the water. So anyway, I got one I cooked out of the bottom of my pick and went behind the levee, and I stayed. They still didn't know. They'll probably be surprised to hear this too, but I was laying behind that levee watching them. So watching what's going on, they had their birds, and I seen they missed a bunch, you know. And I did see them sail one bird across a 40-acre cornfield, crippled with one wing beat up, and that's it. Now, anybody that's ever hunted solid, flooded corn, 200 bushels of corn, to the ears, waist-deep water, you ain't going to find that bird. You can hunt and hunt and hunt, and you're probably not going to find it. You might find one from last week or something, but you're not going to find it. But he did.
It's
he
a lot like looking for a crippling buck brush.
Same thing, Bill. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Same deal. Same exact deal. You go look, but you ain't going to find it. And you know when you take off, it's gone. So anyway, and these ducks get so used to the corn, like they do the buck brush, they know how to weasel it, and they know how to swim the rows so you can't see them, you know, and they lay down,
yeah.
And you know how they do. So anyway, mm-hmm. Long story short, but he does go look. So I knew at the end of the day that they're two or three ducks short of their limit. They should have had them. So go back to the clubhouse. And the way things played at the clubhouse, in Illinois, you have to, if you have pits like that and you're leasing them out, or let's just say you and Rocky, Bill, you and Rocky leased a pit up here, and for that pit you lease, you have to put in the state of Illinois. It used to be $15, I think it's $20-$25 now, and you have to put in because you leased that pit. If you farm the place or own it, you don't have to do this. But if you lease it or run a commercial club, you have to pay so much for every pit. And they send you a sheet that you sign your name, address, and all that on, not your license, but your name and address. At the end of the day, it has every duck on there, and you mark on there what duck you killed. Every day you do this with every hunter. Mm. So when the hunters come in and fill a sheet out, and any of you guys that did goose hunted in southern Illinois years ago, you used to have to do the same thing.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So we got that log right there. That's a log book right there. Every hunter comes through that place, no matter who, has to sign into that and all that. Plus, we were a legal federal picking shed. And what that means is, and the reason we were, not that I like to pick ducks, clean ducks, anything, but we cleaned the ducks for the hunters. We had a big picking shed out there, really nice, and water, everything, electric heaters, everything. And we cleaned the ducks for the hunters because that was just part of the deal with us. But anybody that cleans them and runs a club like that knows you got to leave a wing on them. So if you're breasting these things out, that's a pain. So
yeah.
I did not want to breast one out, and I also didn't want to. There are several reasons. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to contaminate the meat with all them wings and you know, it's just a disaster trying to do that. It's easier to bag them and everything. And then if you register and log that, you can give that bird to whoever because the tag's in there with it and it's been logged. And this is, so what you have to do this, it's not some special permit you have to have or anything. You have a log book, and your log book has name, address, place killed, license number, and every duck, mallard hen, mallard drake, what, you know, green wing tea, whatever it is, it has to be logged in there. Then you put that same information, goes on to a tag, which goes in the bag with the breast. And then you're good to go. Okay, so everybody's got a log of what happened. So once that's done, and if you ever did that in southern Illinois at a picking shed or something down there, your grandma can go pick up your geese at the time. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
It's all tagged, logged, everything's good. Okay, so that's why we did it. And like I said, it was a pass. So first thing we did, when we get back to the shed, we had everything separated on hangers. And once we got back to the picking shed, we hung them all up and went in, and the guides went and filled this all out. You go fill all your birds up. Then they went and cleaned the birds afterwards. And it was quite an ordeal, but we had a system down. It wasn't bad. So I got in there first, so I had all my guys. Next guys had everybody on the place killed their limit, but these guys here got three. So they come back. I'm looking out there, and there's these two guys out there that my buddy had. And I said, they had a duck that was a mallard hen. And I know I'm telling this right. I'm real close, if not. It might have been two ducks, but I think it was just one mallard hen here, and then there was four mallards laying there, and then four mallards over here laying over here in three different piles. And I said, everything good? And he goes, well, yeah, I guess. I said, hey, dude, I watched you. You could have killed your limits. You shot a little better. And I just laughed. I said, where's Tim at? And he goes, oh, he's logging them birds, I think. So he comes back, and he said, and I said something about, is there a problem or something? Is everything good? He said, yeah, well. And he said something about, I killed that other bird over here or something. I kind of laughed, and I said, I hardly doubt that. He probably killed it for you. Half of yours, too. And just laughed. Tim comes back. Did you kill any of them ducks? Yep, killed that mallard hen right there. Okay. So tags all the birds, all good, goes cleans the birds, comes back in, and went in the picking shed, and he hands him his birds, and he goes, hey, do you want my bird? You can have it if you want. Which legally you can't. You can give it away if you want. But it's logged like that. It's logged and it's good. And so when we did that a lot, gave a lot of people birds like that. So anyway, and I can say this. No matter what happened at that club, not one bird ever went out of that club without a tag and wasn't logged in there. And they all got cleaned, every one of them. And I'll go into that later, but that never happened. So anyway, so they go to leave, and I said, you know, and he said something about that bird. And I just said something like, I know who you are. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about, and the way that everything's good, you know, and the way they went, they come back the next time. I said, well, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. We hunt with you tomorrow? Nope, I'm not going to be here. Where are you going? I said, I go to Colorado tomorrow to film. Oh, man, I said, look, you're going back with Tim. I said, then I want to film, and my son-in-law and a couple others is going, you know, it's all good. You know, I said, man, they're going to be here tomorrow. You're going to kill your ducks and geese tomorrow. Oh, yeah, I can't wait. So I wish you could go. Now I got to go. And I purposely didn't want to hunt with them. So, and I probably should have, but I didn't. So they go on back a mile and a half, cross the bridge over into Missouri at their Missouri hotel. The rest of us go on back to town. So the next day, they went hunting, and I sent Brian Reniger, who was my camera guy, full-time camera guy, and the other guy that worked for me all the time, most of these well know, you know, is Big Sean. He worked for me, and I had him film also. And I told him, film right down their barrel. I want to see everything they do. So, and my son-in-law goes along also, plus Tim the guide, and then Tim McGowan was a guide there, and the guy took him the day before. And anyway, they all went. And I can't remember details of this here because I wasn't there. I remember calling back in and see what they killed, and I think they killed all their ducks and geese except for a couple geese or something. But they had everything before the day was over. I said, anything different? No, we got everything on film. They ain't very good shots, but we got it all. Okay. So, all right, good. Everything's good. I got no worries now. Would you be worried about anything at this point? I ain't worried about nothing. It's great. Okay? I don't care. So they take the birds, go across the state line, and that's the end of them, and I don't hear no more from them. That was it. I went on with the season, don't hear anything. So, any questions, Rock?
I've got a few questions. Let me ask you this. Did you ever instruct your guides to count cripples? Because, you know, you can tell a bird that's hit. And I always, and I'm not saying that I'm a bigger, better person than you, but I always instructed my guides, if a bird dropped a wing, dropped a leg, it's counting. It's we may not.
Jerry,
find
we
it.
Counted them, and we counted them, and let me, and I, that's will help me clarify something else. We counted them, and we did a major search for them. Now, did we lose a lot? I don't care who you are. You're a liar.
That's right.
If you're in a good spot, killing them every day like that, grinding. If you're killing 100 ducks a day, 80 to 100 ducks a day in a flooded cornfield, you're losing some. Now,
yeah.
Am I going to find them? I'm gonna get your. I'm gonna count that duck, and I'm gonna take my dog out there, and I'll be gone for an hour. And one way or the other, you're getting your duck. It might not have been yours. You're getting a duck. Your limit's filled. You know what I'm saying? And when you're running a club like this, and you've got these mallards coming here every day and all this, you are not want last thing. You want them guys killed and out of here fast. Again, you're hoping they got something to do in the afternoon. They're gone. So your place doesn't get burnt to the ground. Now I want them to have a good time. I'm not trying to steal their money. I want them to get their limit and go home. You know, and get out of there. We're not going to sit there and burn the place to the ground. So, with that being said, and I won't go no farther with this right now, but with that being said, yeah, our guide shot. And did we look for these cripples? We went after them like crazy, finding them. And if I was at a blind over here and I got killed out, and usually, you know, I would try to get out, and every club owner does this, you put yourself in the best blind, you kill out, and then you can go take care of business the rest of the day while they're out there getting their limit. If I'd see them doing that, I'd take my dog water hunting. I'd go out there next thing you know, I'd come back, and I got all the cripples. So, yeah, we did count them. I mean, couldn't wait to get them, you know, for them.
Yeah, I mean, because that is – people just listening to this, no matter if you're on a guided hunt or you're sitting in the flooded timber of Arkansas, if you crippling brother, if he's watching you in the woods, he's counting him. And when I say
he's counting him, and you better go make a really, really good effort. And that effort is determined.
Reasonable effort is required, period.
Exactly.
And I have a few people out I hunt with over that.
And that reasonable effort is determined by that officer watching you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to it. So you better go out there and hunt your butt off for that duck. So... Which, you know, anybody that's a good hunter or wants to do that, why would, and if you're running a club, you know, I get a bunch of good old boys out there, ducks are piling in or whatever, you know, and they're not taking a reasonable effort to look for some because they got six bunches behind them coming. We'll get it. That happens. If you say it don't happen, it does. You know, I mean, that happens out there. Ah, we'll get, you know. But when you're running a club, you're out there looking. You want that duck. You want it. You want it out of there. And you want mm-hmm. them guys to get their limit and, you know, and be done with your day, you know.
Hey, Jeff, as you look back on it now, without going into details of what's happening in the future part of this story, okay, but as you look back on it now, isn't it the way that they pursue people, isn't it almost, I hope this don't come back and haunt me, isn't it almost entrapment?
Well, that's the very first thing come out of my mouth was entrapment. Now, you go to your lawyer, if there's a lawyer in there listening or whatever, but the first thing both my lawyers said, they're not, entrapment don't put, you know, don't pertain to those boys. It's not entrapment. So, undercover guy, drug guy, and he's undercover living with them for a week, and he smokes a couple joints. Is that entrapment? Nope. I mean, it seems like it, but I'm telling you, it ain't. So,
man, I look back on the...
Is it in our minds? Sure it is. In my mind, it is. But I think, you know, in their defense, I think what they think is like, you shouldn't do it anyway, you know? So,
yeah.
We didn't make the jump off the bridge.
I had that eerie feeling. A few times being a guide, I tried to play by the rules 99.9% of the time. I knew that my groceries that fed my family were on the line. And that at the end of the day, that was what it was about to me. But, you know, I had that eerie feeling that people, you'd shoot a limit in the morning and then, hey, man, here, look, here's a couple $100. Please, can we go back out this afternoon?
Ugh.
And you're like, nah, heck no.
No, you don't. Well, even if you wanted the money and you needed it and you needed the money and do whatever you do, here's the deal with that. I don't care, even if you're an outlaw, even if you're all this and you've done that before, fun hunting or whatever, which if a bunch of these guys say they know everybody out of about 20,000 people say they've never done it. I'm calling somebody a liar. But anyway, do you do as in, this is what always aggravated about me at this deal, and that's where they don't get it. When you're an outfitter and you have a field, you do not burn your field to the ground. That's your number one rule. Don't burn it up. You've got 50 honkers coming in, and you're hunting 20,000 of them, and 50 come at one time. You light them, and you walk them out of the deal and wait for a pair, wait for six, whatever. That's what you do. You're in Canada, it's a different story. But when it's under your gun like that, it's your birds. Yeah, there's 30,000 mallards coming there feeding in my corn every night. Am I going to sit there tomorrow and burn that thing to the ground because you can't hit anything? I'm going to call the hunt. You follow what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You just don't do that. And as a guide, which I did for years, you know, whether it's goose hunting, whatever, your deal is you want to get out there. Your goal is to get out there in the morning, get them killed, get your stuff, and get out field. A lot of times I'll grab my geese, leave my decoys, and come back and get them after the geese get in there and feed, and I'll come back tomorrow and hunt them again. You don't want to sit out there and burn this thing to the ground. So,
right. Yeah. And go back to leaving having birds in the field, crippled or dead birds. I can tell you from personal experience, it's an awful feeling when you're walking out with a limited ducks and your dog or you trip over a dead one that no one knew was there. And now
it's terrible.
You've got an extra bird for 200 mm-hmm. yards or whatever to the truck and all the way home, and you know, what do you, like, back to your Canada, what do you do?
Before I answer that question, I'll tell you what a warden told me. Before Fallen Skies, I made a lot of videos, and one of the most controversial names of a video I ever made, and I did it for marketing, is called One Over the Limit, okay?
Yep.
Everybody's like, oh my God, whatever. Well, they're going to buy it just to see what happens, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, because, my gosh, I got this. Well, I explained it in there, what you said. I just said, you know, a lot of you guys, you know, out there think, you know, you're wondering what this is about, and here it is. And I hunted with a game warden from up here, right here at home. We were hunting at my cousin's flooded cornfield deal way before I had mine. Hunted with him all the time. And we come out, and that exact thing happened. And the dog found a cripple from the day before. We got our limit. I just looked at him. He's not on duty. He's just hunting. I said, all right, Roger, what do you do? What's the deal now? Whose bird's that? He said, as soon as you touch it, and this is the truth, legally, as soon as you touch that bird, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
So if that dog's force, I said, dog's force broke, he ain't going to let loose of it until it rots in his mouth. He said, I'm telling you, as soon as you, I said, I got to get it. He said, I'm telling you. I said, what would you do about that? He said, if a man is smart enough to tell me that exact thing just happened, I'm not going to write him a ticket. Legally, I should. He said,
mm-hmm.
but if he's smart enough to do that, things happen. And he said, any warden worth his weight will understand that. And he said, as a hunter and as a warden right there, I'm not going to. This guy was a tough warden. Most of them didn't like him. But, you know, he was smart. So that's why I made that one over the limit thing and saying, I got to tell this story, you know, in case that happens to somebody, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it works all the time or not, but that's what he said.
But that's another reason to always try to get your birds, you know,
exactly.
Pick up your birds during and after a hunt, because it will
right.
come back and haunt you.
It will somewhere, and I'll go on later in this, you know, and it's telling, you know, about some instances that happened, and well, I can go ahead and tell you one now. When this flooded corn would freeze, I had a pump, a 10-inch pump running in there that ran like a creek of water in that thing, and it was just a steam bath in front of the pit, you know what I mean? You know, them ducks can see that steam and they're coming. You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's just ridiculous. It was Christmas. Okay, all this stuff has all come down on me at this time. Just got this stuff. It ain't been 3 weeks and this has happened. Okay, so I'm out there hunting on Christmas morning. Me and this dog I had. It's the first time I'd got just hunt by myself all year long, because you always got people and filming and hunters and all this here. It was good. I just bought this dog and I wanted to go hunting. It's me and the dog. So rather than have to say, yell, kill them, and worry about 10 faces, I got everything covered up, and I ain't going to say a word. I'm just going to sit there, call 3 times, and shoot them. So in comes a bunch of mallards, Christmas morning. Here comes 3 drakes and a hen. Now, somebody probably beat me up for doing this. Maybe you. So I killed 4 ducks. They come in. They're just fluttered in front of me. I mean, right in front of me. I mean, this, we're talking 12 yards. So I went bang, 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 killed those three drakes. And I just took my time, and I mean, not that I'm nothing, Mickey Mouse could have killed them. The hen gets up, and I know exactly what she's going to do. She's coming around, she's high, and she's going to go back to the refuge and come right over top of me. I slammed another shell in the gun, because she went way out and came back. I slammed in her shed, made three calls. She come right directly over the pit, went boom, killed her. The reason I did, because I just thought it was cool. I get forward my four ducks and done on Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. So not that I'm trying to kill every hen in the world, but it was legal, and I did it. So
sure.
Okay, so I kill these ducks. Now, the 2 or 3 weeks prior to this, we had pounded them in this, and there's skin, there's ice, and it's ice to where it's not hard enough you can walk on, the dog can walk on, but you can't get out there. You follow what I'm saying? So
oh,
the only thing's
moving.
Been out there is dogs trying to get to this, and we've been pounding them. So when ice happens like that, them ducks get up, them cripples get up on the ice. Now, we're talking, at the time, there's 80-some acres of this out there. So there's several out there. The dog comes back. We'll get four-wheeler. Pick up the duck. He brings them all in. I'm as proud as I can be. I ain't been there. It was like my turkey hunt this morning. It was fast and furious and quick, and I'm going to go home for Christmas, and then I'm going to tell Cole and them boys, you better get out here this afternoon, which they did. On the way in, I get the four-wheeler, and I had these levees between these ponds, these lakes. And my dog, this dog, when, as soon as he got out of the pit, that's the first thing he went looking through all his corn, looking, trying to find a cripple. Now, if you don't think there ain't a cripple in all your areas you hunt, if it's that big or your buck brush or whatever, there is going to be ones you didn't get. So The dog comes up. I'm as proud as I can be, and I'm thinking, man, I'm legal as I can be, everything is. He comes back. Here comes a mallard drake. I mean, this thing is alive at one wing busted. What do I do at that point? What do you do? The dog's got it. It comes from us. So I tell you what I did. I grabbed it, wrung its neck, threw it in the basket. And I'm thinking, oh, boy. I let the dog run. He'd run, you know, all the way back with me to the four-way back to the clubhouse. Long story short, before I got back, he found three more.
Ooh.
So there I sat. And this is past the point of return, so it don't matter what I tell now. So there I went. Now, am I guilty right now? I'm as guilty as sin right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. So here's what's going on.
You did the morally correct thing.
So, if I could knock him out of my dog's mouth, which I'm not going to, and my dog's trained to enforce broken, he's not going to let loose of him, I just knock him out of his mouth and don't touch him. Somehow do that, I rent my dog, and a cripple's going to get away and die, a coyote's going to get him or something, die a miserable death. I have several things I can do. So I pick it up and wring its neck and bring it in. I did these ducks, and here's what I did. I pick them up, bring them up. Now, I talked about Illinois, you have to write down, you know, everything you do and all this tag. So, what am I going to do with these? I'm not going to put them in my truck with no tags, no nothing, along with my other ducks, and take them back to my house about 5 miles away. No way am I doing that. So, you're thinking, you think of this situation, what you would do. So, here's exactly what I did. I tagged the birds underneath my partner's name, wrote them under his name, then mallards under his name, made a tag out in his name, put them all that. I got to town. There's an old boy, if you ever seen a video I got, I got a video about catching snapping turtles. I don't know if any of you ever seen
it. I have it.
anyway, that old boy there had a bunch of kids. He didn't have much money. He's a commercial fisherman, did what he did. And long story short, I went by there Christmas morning and gave him a bag of ducks, all the ducks. Mine, them, all over. You know, they thought I'd give him a great Christmas present. Now, am I guilty? I'm guilty of sin for this deal, legally. But my dad would have, and I know a lot of people in the industry what they would have done, but my dad would roll over his grave if I stomped them four in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in all honesty, if you thought there was a game board there, is probably what you should do, you know, to get out of it, you know. But so
except that there again, wanting waste, if he's watching you, it's a much worse ticket than over the limit. So
So what do you do in that? Did I do that? Yep. And write me a ticket for it because that's how it happened. But I'm probably going to make you go take the jury trial at this point. The jury decide. But that's exactly what happened. You know, so, and I'm already in trouble. They've already come down on me indictments and stuff, and then this happens. You know, so what do you do? you know.
Wow.
But, and that's going to become a part of this story in the near future. Hey, Jeff, I want to close with two questions real quick.
Okay.
One, looking back on it now, what would you change? What would you change about those two sets of hunts? And number two, if you didn't know by that call, that guy calling you and saying, hey, there's some undercover guys coming to bust somebody major and you figure it out. But if you wouldn't have known that, could you have figured it out on your own that, hey, something's fishy about this?
You know, I have a couple guys that hunts with me all the time that are paranoid if everybody walks in the door. And, you know, before we talk to you about this was my problem. And I think we may have talked about this earlier. My whole family was union people, union iron workers, whatever. Okay. So when the way I was raised from my dad being at my grandpa and myself and all that, those union guys who we hung out with, you know, it was our brother members, what everybody calls your union brothers, you know, in construction. We're talking construction trade here. I'm not talking about, you know, anything. I'm talking about construction guys that work together day after day. Mm-hmm. You know, I always trusted everybody because I might not like all those guys in my union local, but I'd give them my wallet and I'd come back and I may have a couple more dollars in it. I mean, I just trusted everybody. So that was a big part of my problem. I trusted everybody around me, you know, and I had a lot of people that was paranoid and I should have paid more attention to them. I thought they were nuts, you know. So I just didn't think the world was the way it was, you know. I mean, I'd done this all my life, you know, with them, and it was all a lot of trusting people. But, you know, you get your bad egg once in a while, but for the most part, that's just the way I was raised. So should I have been more? Would have I figured out? Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I know another time, you know, in my life when I swear they were, and these guys weren't near as good. But these guys, you know, there's a reason this guy was, you know, goes after who he does. He's really good at it, you know. And as much as he caused me and whatever and the way it went down, I have to say, I was talking about that Justin May. He's a good, you know, he ended up, you know, he's a nice guy. He had a job to do, and he did it, and that's the way they do it, and, you know, whatever. So, you know, but what I've done, what if I wouldn't have known, and these same guys were here, if that was the question you was asking. The only difference I could see was I probably wouldn't have gave him shells to shoot, you know, for one.
Yeah.
I'd probably let him shoot his own, burn up his own ammo. I wouldn't have not shot until the limit was killed. You know, I would have kept shooting then probably till the limit was killed because we're filming and I'm shooting and the gun, you know, that's what most people wanted to see, you know. And not being arrogant or egotistical, but it was my video. They want to see me shoot and that's probably what I would have done. So other than that, you know, if I can't think of one thing I'd change. And I probably would have hunted with those guys at my place. You know, I probably would have hunted with them rather than not hunted with them. You know, that's the only other difference, you know. And would we have killed all of our birds or whatever? Yeah, we probably would have, you know. But really, in all honesty, there's nothing. I wouldn't have changed anything, really. You know, other, you know. I mean, when you tell somebody, if you told somebody tonight, you're going to go take a ride with state police is going to get in there. There's undercover state police, and he's going to ride with you. Down there, you're going to have a drink or two, and you're going to go out to supper or whatever. You're going to watch. You're probably not going to drink. You're probably not going to have a drink. You're going to make sure your seatbelt's on. You're going to watch that speedometer. Follow what I'm saying? Instead of running 60 to 55, you're going to run 50. And, you know, so when that point comes, you really watch yourself, you know. Doesn't mean you were wrong, you know, that you were doing anything wrong before, but you just really watch yourself, you know. So I guess to answer your question, that's it, you know. I probably wouldn't have changed a whole lot.
You know, it sounds like these guys were, you know, and because I know the details of what's coming, I mean, it sounds like these guys wanted you no matter what. And
the information they had, what I didn't know at the time, the information they had been fed at that time, that's what, if I had anything I wish, if I would have known the information they had been fed to them going into this, it probably would have ended right there. It probably would have ended right there. I'd have straightened them out right there. But they thought it was way more than a duck and goose thing. This was way beyond that. So, that's the part that most nobody knows.
It's going to get really interesting. And I'll say this. I know some guys that they wanted, and, man, they, some people that hunted flooded corn, same as you, man, they've charged people I've known in the past of manipulating flooded corn when they let's say they loaded a UTV out and they drove the UTV up to the blind and they drove it back out and they knocked a couple of corn stalks over. Well, guess
yes,
what?
Sir.
That's manipulation.
Walking out there after that cripple because you got to go after that cripple and you cross three different roads and you knock it down in the water, that's manipulating.
Well, that's what the 98 change was to address, and evidently not everyone got the memo. That was the only real change in 98 was to clarify that going to and from the blind or picking up birds or that sort of thing, you can knock some down during normal ingress and egress without it being an issue. But not everyone got the memo.
Let's say you take your UTV exactly. out to pick up a cripple.
Well, for example, a lot of times I take my boat out. I had a war eagle boat with a mud motor on it. You know, I take out there, and you know how a mud motor is. If you're running down through a little aisle, it slides, you know, when you go to turn. And sometimes they get away from you a little bit, and you may knock a couple down. That's, no matter if it's an accident or whatever, that's manipulating. You know, I mean, the way I was told by them. So, yeah, it's, I mean, I'll give you a good one. Like, we hunted out of I have three pits in this 45 acres, but they get used to them pits where them pits are at. So, after a few days, they get stale. They know what it is. So, I take my layout boats. I had a couple of Momars layout boats, and I would, corn them all up, and then I'd get out in the areas, you know, right in the middle of the corn. We would pick the corn off of there and get rid of it and put it in the boat, do whatever, and get rid of the corn. So we wouldn't do that because we knew the film was going to show us knocking that corn down. You follow what I'm saying? And we were going to get a ticket later. That's how bad we were worried about stuff like that, you know. So, I mean, if my dog knocked it over, whatever, I didn't care. I figured that's a dog doing it. Write him a ticket. But, we were really, we really, really watched that. You know, so.
Well,
and
we've compared this.
People should be cautious of, for sure.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, we compared this to a restaurant serving a fine steak. Well, the waiter, I better be politically correct, the server is at the table with the steak about to put it on the table. So, Jeff, thank you again. I think we kind of know where this is heading into next week. Bill, thank you again for being here, asking great questions. Just appreciate both of y'all. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.